We'll turn back a few chapters to Genesis 13. We'll start there in a moment. I want to go ahead and let you know of a little change. Tonight's lesson will not be the discipline of the Lord. It's going to be part two of what you're about to hear. Tonight we're going to talk more about out of Genesis chapter 19. But just like an old-timey Gunsmoke Western, before you watch the first episode, just want to let you know there's going to be a second. So this morning, what we're going to deal with, and tonight's lesson will be how to miss salvation. And I think you'll understand more about that tonight if you come back for part two. This morning, the idea is, but there are many righteous people there, right? There's kind of a question. And the verses that Pat just read to us, we're going to get to in a moment. It seems like there's a big conversation that takes place, and I know that you've had them in your life, where what you think at the beginning of the conversation is drastically different than what you think by the end of the conversation. And we'll get to that in a moment. Abraham goes through a bit of a change. The stories that we're going to deal with today have to do with Abraham, who is the uncle of his nephew by the name of Lot. Both men are righteous. 2 Peter chapter 2 talks about Lot being a righteous man. You can look in Hebrews 11. You can look all through Genesis to find out about Abraham being righteous. And we'll come to find out how God sees righteous people. I want you to think for a moment. We hear the term Sodom and Gomorrah, and our mind probably turns sour pretty fast of how evil it was, and that's fine because you're right. But I want you to see the land before any of the destruction takes place. Here in Genesis 13, God has blessed Abraham and Lot so much that their herds have gotten so big and so plentiful that they cannot live on the same plot of ground anymore. There's just not enough water. There's not enough pasture. Everything has gotten so big so fast that they have to decide. Their herdsmen are kind of starting to fight in the fields over water and pasture land, the green grass, that they have kind of decided between the two of them, saying, it's time for us to part ways. They're not angry with each other. Don't think of it that way. It's just a geographical decision. Well, if we split our herds up, there'll be plenty for each of us, and neither one of us will suffer because of it. Here's the picture, and I want you to look down in Genesis 13. Look down at verse 10. Abram is kind of left this proposition about splitting up. Verse 10 says, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. Do you hear the description of this land? Sodom and Gomorrah sit down kind of in the valley basin of where the Jordan River flows. Apparently, before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, it was a beautiful place. It was so beautiful that it's described here in Genesis as being like the garden of the Lord. Well, that garden is talked about back in Genesis chapter 2. You're talking about the Garden of Eden. This place was so lush and so beautiful, it reminded people of, this is like the Garden of Eden. How beautiful and delightful does that sound? But the writer of Genesis, being Moses, he goes ahead and points out, now this was before Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. Because somebody who came after that point in time would say, oh, it doesn't look anything like that now. There's a reason. Lot looked out, he saw all the ground was watered well. This would be great for raising up herds and crops. This would be wonderful. I'm going to pick to go there. And I want you to notice, look at verse 11. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, which while Lot settled in the cities of the valley, and moved his tents as far as Sodom. So they kind of split ways, not in anger or anything like that. Lot takes to the valley part where the Jordan River goes. It's as beautiful as the Garden of Eden. Abram, on the other hand, takes up to the plains to the land of Canaan, which we're later on going to know is the Promised Land. And he goes up there, and he's fine with that. But I want you to point out the next verse. Look at verse 13. It says, now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. Here's the trouble. Just like any place that is as beautiful as the Garden of Eden, you're going to find sinners. just like man and woman or Adam and Eve. He says, here was the distinction between living along the river basin and living up in the land of Canaan. The people along that river basin were wicked people. It doesn't say they're just wicked. They're wicked exceedingly. And their relationship with God is sinners. Now, here's something for you. I don't know whether it means anything or not, but this is the first time the word sinner is used in the Bible. Whenever we get to the New Testament and people say, you know, we're sinners. We're as wicked, evilly, as the citizens of Sodom and Gomorrah. That should be the history we hear whenever we hear the term sinner. It's not a beautiful term. There's not anything nice about it. And in being called a citizen from there was not any great glorious thing. It was perhaps the height of a defaming statement. Oh, they're nothing but sinners. You remember the way the scribes and the Pharisees used to talk about the people that Jesus would eat with? He says, they're nothing but tax collectors and sinners. If there's a place where they would belong to fit, it would be Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what they mean. They don't say that. Now that you see a little bit about this land, beautiful land, except for the people, they're exceedingly wicked. They're sinners, to frame a term. Look over at Genesis chapter 18. Look at verse 1. In between chapters 13 and 18, there's been kings that are warring. They've come in. They've even taken Lot and his family as captives. Abram has to go out and fight war to get his nephew and his nephew's family back. They go and do that. They're taken back. As things continue, right here, actually even before in chapter 17, God has told Abram he's going to have a son out of his own loins. I'm not talking about Ishmael. I'm talking about Isaac, the one who was to come. He's already been told. In chapter 18, it opens up. Verse 1. Now the Lord appeared to him, talking about to Abraham. He's had a name change since before. By the oaks of Mamre, while he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. I mean, this blazing hot. They got the tent. My imagination is kind of a little bit of a covering over the front of the tent, almost like sitting on the front porch in the heat of the day. Here he is, taking perhaps a little bit of a rest. Verse 2. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. He sees these three men. Now, it's going to give us more details as it goes, so to avoid any confusion. Out of these three, two are going to be angels. One is going to be the Lord. I can't tell you much more about that. But that's who it's going to be. And it'll explain that as we go. They come to Abraham. Throughout the next several verses, once again, the Lord is going to tell Abraham, you're going to have a son. Sarah is listening at the front of the tent to hear the conversation. She laughs about this whole ordeal, thinking, am I going to have this now that I'm old? I mean, she's 89 years old at this point. Abraham in this story is 99 years old. And they're hearing this message. Now, we're going to overlook that for now. Look down at verse 16. Then the men rose up from there. That's all three of them. And looked down towards Sodom. And Abraham was walking with them to send them off. Here's just the same picture that you do when you have people that you love that come from a long ways off. Whenever they get ready to leave, you don't, you know, tell them goodbye from the kitchen. A lot of times you walk out with them. Well, here's what Abraham does. He sees them basically to the door, even beyond. Verse 17. The Lord said, notice it says the Lord. It says, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do, since Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed. For I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. Do you see the Lord's intent for his righteous people? He says, should I keep this secret that I'm going to go down here and destroy the cities of the valley, which is more than just Sodom and Gomorrah, there's at least three others that we know of. Should I tell him or should I not tell him? Should I let him in on what I'm about to do, or should I hide it from him? And he'll have to find out after the fact. You see the Lord's conversation almost with himself of saying, should I let the righteous know what's about to happen? And he decides, yes. God doesn't hide things from the righteous. He doesn't say, well, you can't look behind the curtain here. He says, I want to show you what I'm doing. I want to show you how I work. And I want to show you why I work. Notice how it continues. Look at verse 20. And the Lord said, seems like this part is spoken out loud. Maybe the other was too. The outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave. He's telling this to Abraham. He says, it's wicked down there. It's exceedingly grave. It's near death. Verse 21. I will go down now and see if they have done entirely according to its outcry, which has come to me, and if not, I will know. I think this is amazing and awesome. Here's an all-knowing God who says, I've heard an outcry from these people, about these people, that they are exceedingly wicked, wicked to the point of they deserve to die. I'm going to go down and see if the reports I've heard are right. I will personally do it. Doesn't that seem kind of curious to you? Here's a little life application for us. Whenever you think you pretty well know what's going on, go ask. Go seek it out. That's what God does. Even though he knows it all, he says, I'm going to give him one last chance. I'm going to go see it and find out. Says, if it's not the way that I've heard, which I expect it to be that way, says, then we'll change. But I'm looking to destroy this place. Verse 22. Then the men turned away from there and went towards Sodom, while Abraham was still standing before the Lord. You see the picture? Remember, it started off with three. Two leave. They're headed off toward the valley where Sodom and Gomorrah is. One is still there. It calls him the Lord. Or at least he's the messenger of the Lord, at the least. Here's where the conversation begins. It's just the two of them. It's just Abraham and the Lord. And I want you to see Abraham's response. And this is where the title of the lesson comes from. Look at verse 23. Abraham came near and said, will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you indeed sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous and the wicked are treated alike. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly? What does it sound like Abraham believes about Sodom and Gomorrah? There's a lot of righteous people there. Right? Don't you kind of have that thought that that's what's going through Abraham's mind? He says, you're going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Don't you know that there's righteous people there? Does God know about the righteous? Yeah. Abraham's thinking, why would you sweep the righteous away with the wicked? And then I don't know where Abraham gets his number. This almost sounds like a reverse auction as it goes down through. I don't know if you've ever sold something, maybe on Craigslist or maybe at an auction or maybe even at a yard sale. And two people come up together, and one's a seller, one's a buyer. Here's the item. And you're waiting to see who will reveal their hand first. Who's going to name the first price? Because the person who doesn't name is the one that has the upper hand. And you kind of wait and see who's going to say it first. If it was a washing machine, you just wait. You think, man, I'd really like to get $100 for it. Let's see what they're thinking. And they say, I'll give you $150. Sold! You got it. And because of the response that they give you so fast, you think, maybe I should have asked for less. Maybe I should have done this different. And it seems that Abraham kind of has this, now this is going to be a bad term, but stay with me. It's almost like he has buyer's remorse. Almost as if he says, boy, God asked that, he answered that question a little too fast. Maybe I'm way off here. Maybe I think there are more righteous people there than God knows. God knowing the truth. Abraham, what if there are 50 righteous people? Will you still destroy it? I don't know how big Sodom and Gomorrah are, population-wise, census-wise, and anything I would tell you would be a guess. But I venture to say the population is more than 50. Maybe it was a couple thousand. 50 is going to be a minor number compared to whatever it is. 50. If there are 50 people, I said, I know you're just. I know you won't sweep away. You won't treat the righteous and the wicked the same. That's not you. Abraham knows God. Those of faith come to know God. The righteous will come to know God. God is revealing to Abraham who he really is here. Abraham says, will you do it for 50? God says, sure. If there are 50, I won't do it. You see Abraham's wheels turning? That was pretty fast. Why was he so quick to say 50 would be fine? Then you get verse 27. And Abraham replied, now behold, I have ventured to speak to the Lord, though I am but dust and ashes. Abraham knows, look, I don't have a whole lot to do with this situation. At best, I'm just a bunch of dust and ashes. Interesting, apparently he knew how Adam was made. Apparently that was already known by the people. People today don't seem to know that. He says, I know I'm just dust and ashes. Suppose the 50 righteous are just lacking 5. Will you destroy the whole city because of 5? He said, I'll not destroy it on account of 45. No. So if there's 45 righteous, I won't destroy it. It works its way through. And I want you to notice the way Abraham's careful. He knows that he's standing before the Lord. That this is not some everyday conversation. And he knows that I don't have a lot of authority to ask these questions, but I'm asking. Have you ever done that? Sometimes even with your close friends, you say, is it all right if I ask you a question? And whenever your close friend asks you that, you know they're kind of like, you know, I know maybe I don't have a right to ask this question, but can I ask it? I feel a little timid. There's Abraham right here. Verse 29, he spoke to him yet again and said, suppose 40 are found there. And he says, I will not do it on account of the 40. He said, oh, may the Lord not be angry and I shall speak. Suppose 30 are found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, now behold, I have ventured to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there. And he said, I will not destroy it on account of 20. Then he said, oh, may the Lord not be angry, and I shall speak only this once. He says, one more question before you go. Suppose there are just 10 found there. He said, I'll not destroy it on account of the 10. And if you notice in verse 33, as soon as he had finished speaking to Abraham, the Lord departed, and Abraham returned to his place. A big difference between 50 and 10, isn't there? What did the Lord already know? There aren't 10. He already knew it. That's why it didn't matter. Whenever Abraham started off at 50, the Lord was thinking, you're not even in the ballpark. There's nowhere close to that. You could multiply the righteous people times 10 and you're not going to get that. Sure. 45? Sure. 40? Sure. 30? Sure. 20? Sure. 10?
Sure.
What's Abraham finding out? Sodom and Gomorrah are a lot more wicked than I ever imagined. It's a lot worse there than I thought. Abraham was questioning at the first, surely there's 50 there. 50. Every time it seems as he gives a number, the realization within Abraham becomes more and more about how wicked Sodom and Gomorrah are. I venture to guess, and this is just a guess, Abraham knew that his nephew was still living down there. That part he knew. I think he was thinking about Lot the whole time. 50. I know Lot's family's down there. 45. 40, 30, 20, 10. Surely 10 will be enough to save Lot. They part ways. Remember, the two have already gone off down to Sodom and Gomorrah. The Lord leaves after Abraham says just one more question. It almost seems that if Abraham would have maybe not have said that the Lord would have stayed a little longer. I don't know. He said two more questions. He said, I'm just going to speak one more time. 10. If there's 10, I won't destroy it. Abraham goes back to his tent. I'm sure he and Sarah are having a little bit of a funny conversation about the newborn that's coming their way. The Lord leaves. He doesn't meet up again with the two that are going down to Sodom and Gomorrah. You'll see that tonight. I want you to see Abraham. It never has any mention through the book, the rest of the book of Genesis after chapter 19 of Lot and Abraham ever meeting up again. It never gives you that impression. Now, Abraham would have known about the descendants that are going to come. But I want you to see the farewell thoughts. Look down in chapter 19, and I just want you to look at a couple of verses. Look down at verses 27 and 28. I don't know if this is the next day after this conversation that Abraham has with the Lord, or whether it's 2 days later. I'm more likely to believe 2 days. Now, Abraham arose early in the morning and went to the place where he had stood before the Lord. 2 days later, he's still thinking about this conversation. Still considering the fact of what's going on. He goes out to the same place where the Lord was, where they had this conversation. He, being in Canaan, can look down into the valley of the Jordan. He can see it. He can see what's going on. And I want you to notice what he sees. Look at verse 28. And he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley. And he saw and behold the smoke of the land ascended like the smoke of a furnace. What is Abraham thinking? What's going through his mind? There's one thing he knows for certain. There weren't even 10. I thought they were better than that. I thought the state of Sodom and Gomorrah was better off than just having even 10. I wonder if Abraham thought maybe I should ask for a lower number. Did he contemplate, is Lot still alive? Was he righteous? I venture to say that Abraham thought about himself for a moment. Am I righteous? Am I really going after what's right? And he probably thought back to the day before when his wife laughed and the Lord said what he would do. Probably thinking back to the times before when God had told Abraham, you're going to have a son. You'll have him about a year from now. And even Abraham didn't believe it at first. Sometimes we estimate the planet. We look around. What number would you want to give if God was talking about destroying Jefferson City? What number would you bargain down to, where you might feel comfortable about your relatives and your friends? If the Lord was real quick to respond to the number that you gave, would it make you hesitant, where you might ask for a lesser number? The point in going through all this morning, things aren't as good as you think. They weren't as good as Abraham thought. We write people and say, oh, they're good people. They're fine. They'll be okay. Abraham thought that at first when he said 50. He wasn't thinking that whenever he saw the smoke coming out of the valley. The point for today, for the ending of part one, are you righteous? Are we more righteous than we think? Do we need to think back on our conversations with God? Do we need to consider, are we of the faith? Do we strive to honor God in everything that we do? It's easy to assume there's a lot of righteous people there. We need to look at ourselves. The supper is a time for examination. Don't be like Abraham and look down in the valley and see it all burning and think, there weren't even 10. It was so much worse than I imagined. This event changes Abraham. He has a change within him if you continue through the book of Genesis with his life. He is more resilient. He is a stronger faith whenever he has seen the reality of what God has showed him. You remember where the Lord was asking, should I show Abraham this or not? The Lord decided based upon, Abraham is righteous, and I need to show him more about what's going on around him. Don't wait for the judgments to come upon our nation before you figure out that we're not righteous. We're God's people. We'll see what God does with his people tonight, even in the midst of destruction. Will he hold off destruction? We know the smoke was already coming up out of the valley. But what does he do with his righteous people? Need to be careful with the eyes that we look and see with. Not the eyes of a judgment and a Pharisee. Eyes to look at ourselves and ask, are we really truly going after what the Lord desires? Part one ends here. Tonight we'll talk about, how do you miss salvation? How do you know if you've got it or not? And we'll see easy ways that people miss it. And you'll hear the echoes of the age that we live in now from millenniums ago. If there's anyone here this morning and you haven't turned to the Lord, you haven't gone after him with everything you have, you need your faith strengthened by the prayers of the saints as we go before an almighty God. Today is the day of salvation. Today is the day to move. Not later. The city may be on fire by then.